You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Zondervan, a revered and reliable source for transformative and inspirational content. Support this podcast by visiting zondervan.com and find your next favorite book.
Hey guys, this is Jerry. Welcome to another episode of Cross and Culture. I'm excited to have my buddy Chad on the episode today. Chad is an author, a traveling speaker, and a former Navy SEAL. Chad, thank you so much for being on today.
Super stoked to be on the program with you here.
I'm excited, man. You wrote a book called Seal of God, and I'm going to brag on you for a second. You have just hit over 100,000 copies that have been sold, correct?
That's right. Yeah, the publisher sent me like a special edition with 100,000 copies in print on a hardcover, and I don't know exactly what
that
means.
That's a big deal, bro. Okay. 100,000 copies of a book is a big deal, and so I got to give you a round of applause because that's pretty awesome. But man, before the book, obviously there's a lot that came before that. You know, your life and you stepping into being a Navy SEAL and what that's all about. So tell me a little bit about your story and kind of how your whole journey came about.
Sure. I think maybe the best way to kick off is, first of all, an understanding for what a Navy SEAL is, in case folks are wondering, like, what exactly is a SEAL? Because I did have a girl ask me if that meant that I worked at SeaWorld one time. But what most probably don't know, a SEAL is actually an acronym. It stands for our areas of operation, sea, air, and land.
Okay.
And kind of
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So giving folks an idea of what my team was doing on land, on the last deployment I was involved in, we're out in Iraq. Mm. And we as a team were given the task of hunting down men that make suicide vests and there's roadside bombs, IEDs.
Jeez.
And while we're out there, we're working with a group called the ISOF, which is the Iraqi Special Operations Forces. And one of our goals with these guys is teach them how to fight their own fights. Mm. And so the best way to do that is to not only train them on base, but actually go outside the wire and fight side by side with them.
Dang.
Well, if you can imagine a whole deployment going by, I'd say pretty good, because we've bagged and gagged some bad dudes. We're making the world a better place.
Yeah.
And we were coming up on what looked like just enough time on the calendar to do maybe one more operation before we go. And we weren't really sure if the ISOF was ready for us to pass the baton off to them. So we decided—
Because you're still like training them, basically.
It's just a work in progress.
Got it.
So we decide, let's do this. We'll just do a little test run, right? We'll make this last operation a sort of graduation operation. We're going to let them plan the whole thing from the ground up. We're hands off, but we'll be there with them just in case things go bad. And so they start from scratch. The first thing they need is they need some intel. They find this source out on the street that tells them about a man. That's an Iraqi policeman. So we're looking at this guy. It's a policeman by day, but at night back home, he's one of these bomb makers that we're looking for.
Oh my gosh.
And so the ISOF, they come up with this whole plan, how they want to approach the house, get in, grab this guy, extract. It all looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
And they mention one other unique thing to us. They say, hey, look, we realize that we, the ISOF, we get shot at more than SEALs do, and we think we figured out why.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of curious what they thought it was. Like, all right, have at it. And there it gets the color of your uniforms. We're like, really? The color of our uniform? Like, nothing to do with our tactics, the way we shoot, move, communicate. You think it comes down to the mere pattern on a uniform.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah. So they're saying, we're wondering if you'd be willing to maybe take off your American colored uniform. So we have a pile of ISOF uniforms that you guys can put on.
Yeah.
So like, all right, let's get this straight. You want us to put your uniforms on to get shot at more with you. And they're like, yeah. It's like,
let me ask you this. Is in the services, is that allowed?
That is allowed.
I don't know. I don't know. So I'm like, okay, wearing someone else's uniform, is that allowed?
We're on these operations where it's advise and assist type operation.
Yeah.
So it's perfectly fine, you know, to be blending in with these guys. Not only do we wear their uniforms, we strip the paint off of our Humvees and painted our vehicles up their way. So we are like embedded now.
Yeah,
we're looking like these guys. And for anyone listening right now that can't see me, you know, my dark skin start growing out a little facial hair, then get on an Iraqi uniform.
Yeah.
I'm looking around like, I blend in really good with these guys right now.
He's not lying. I'm looking at him right now.
And so I'm up on the Humvee. I've got the 50 caliber machine gun in front of me. This is the final operation. Night vision goggles on. I'm looking around through my green little world and just kind of going over this mental inventory as I'm thinking about all the things I know about this night and what's going on in my head. I know my weapon is headspace and time. That means it's ready to go. I know where this guy lives, how we're getting in, grabbing him, extracting. But one unique thing I know about this operation that I can't help but to think about that makes it unique, it makes it different than every other operation, I know this is the last operation, which also means I know just a matter of days from now, I'm going to be back home, Southern California.
Yeah.
I'm thinking surfing in the ocean.
Were you married at this time?
No, but
so
I had
not married. Were you a believer?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I had a girlfriend who ultimately became, you know, my wife. And yeah. I knew that was the big plan. Like, I'm going to marry that girl when I get back home. But
so
I hadn't
you have a life. You have a life in Southern California. And here's this, what you're hoping is your last mission.
Should be the last
Should
operation.
Should be the last mission, and last operation. And you're like, all right, here I go.
We've made it this far. No hiccups, no problems. So, you know, why on this last operation?
Was that a weird feeling?
Go wrong? It felt good. I was feeling really good. But little did we know that entire time we were being set up for an ambush. We're about to actually get thrown into the worst circumstances we've been on this entire deployment. As we're going right into this ambush, these guys knew that we're coming. We start taking effective fire from three different directions. So now we're in this gunfight, you know, for our lives.
Yeah.
And it really was the team's ability to shoot, move, communicate, and perform as Navy SEALs that ultimately led to even the possibility of me coming home and standing in front of this microphone with you, you know, right now. But, you know, before I hit on, like, the details of how that went, you know, you originally asked me just a little bit of background. I'll share, like, the road to becoming a SEAL. Basically, for me, fresh out of high school, attending a local community college, I didn't have any real big plans. I did a little bit of skateboarding. I was sponsored for a while by Vans Shoes. Did some competing.
Dude, I never would have guessed that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you were born in California?
Born in California, yep. I was born technically in Long Beach and grew up in Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
And so I kind of thought for a while, maybe I want to be a pro skateboarder, maybe I want to be a pro baseball player. But, you know, those things that, you know, really were a passion before, I just didn't feel so stimulated by it anymore. And my identity really was caught up in the whole skateboarding thing. That was my circle of friends. So when I no longer was competing and the sponsor eventually is like, if you're not going to compete, we're not going to sponsor anymore. Yeah, so that went away. I noticed a lot of my friends began to go away as well. And so I kind of just went through this period of time, you know, it was maybe like the first year of junior college where I kind of felt like I'm walking through the dark lands here.
Yeah,
you know?
Trying to figure yourself out.
Failing all my classes. It's all my own fault. I'm just not showing up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm ditching, surfing, doing whatever feels good.
Being a typical Californian.
That's right. But
young Californian.
There comes a point where you got to face the music.
Yeah, exactly.
And for me, that was driving into that local community college parking lot, Golden West College. It's the end of the year. It's time to take finals. I didn't study for them. I'm not passing any of these classes. It just hit me like, wow, I'm turning out to be a loser. I mean, the kind of guy that no young man would ever want to be.
Yeah.
And so when I was young, I got told pretty frequently, you know, that big word potential gets thrown around. Like, the sky's the limit. You could do anything you want to do. And I 100% bought into it and believed it because that is true. But there does come a certain point in life where it's like, what trajectory are you on? You know, it's time to do something.
Did your father instill that to you? Who instilled that to you?
He did. Yeah. A great father. He taught me a lot of discipline in terms of like things like sports, playing baseball, skateboarding. That's how I began to excel at those things. And in a sense, now I'm kind of going, I'm going against, you know, the code that he taught me. You know, I'm just going off doing my own thing, doing a lot of things that would be very displeasing to him.
Yeah.
You know, had he known what was going on, I was living a lie. He had no idea I wasn't even going to school. And so failing all these classes, I'm thinking, how do I turn this around? I want to do something big, something significant in my life. I'm just sitting there in my truck and I think I come up with a perfect plan. I'm like, I know what I'm going to go do with my life. I'm going to go become an Alaskan crab fisherman. Yeah. I'm thinking, I'm watching Deadliest Catch.
Dude, I'm not joking. One of my all-time favorite shows.
I'm
a diehard fisherman, and I know we've talked about it a little bit, but seriously, one of my all-time favorite shows. Also, one of the most dangerous jobs in the world.
It is. And that's what kind of got my attention. I used to work on the sport fishing boats locally, and so I met a couple of Alaskan crab fishermen, and they would have all these tales of, you know, ships that, like, right in front of their ship just broke in half and sunk into the water, and they're rescuing guys, and, you know, then the pay, because it's such a dangerous job, you get paid so much money. So I'm thinking, like, I want to go do something like that, like something significant. And so I actually almost settled on that idea when this other idea just came floating into my mind. Like, wait, no, why can't I go join the military? But not just that, like, I want to be a part of the most elite. If I'm going to do this, I want to go through the most difficult, grueling military training. Like, I know what I want to be. I want to be a Navy SEAL.
That's awesome, dude.
And so just sitting there in a school parking lot, it's hard for people to believe because a lot of people think that it takes a lot of prior thought. But I'm just sitting in a parking lot thinking, I don't want to go take those tests right now. What other direction can I go? So I'm like, I'm going to be a frogman.
Well, and your dad, I assume, because he encouraged you, buddy, you can do, you know, I know how he said it. I'm explaining how my dad said it to me. Buddy, literally, you can do anything you put your heart to. You can do it. And I grew up that way as well. Like, I believed that if I worked hard enough, my dad's like, dude, I don't care what you do. I know you can do it. I believe in you. So I walked into soccer that way. You know, when I played for a couple bands, played some drums, I went all out.
Right.
You know, whenever I was communicating at something or if someone said, you can't do something, I'm like, watch me. Because my dad believes in me, so watch me. If you say I can't do it, watch me, I'll do it. So
that's
was
the
part
motivational
of that because of your
speech,
dad. Yeah.
Right? That's the motivational speech right there. Some people need someone to tell them, like, hey, you can do it. Come on, buddy, you can do it. Which is really good, I think, in the beginning, nurturing, you know, your children in that sense. But eventually, you know, they adopt it in such a way where it's like they don't need that to be motivated. You know, it's more like, tell me I can't, and I'm gonna show
you. Watch me, dude.
Yeah. Tell me.
Explain
I can't.
What you said something. You said I became a frogman. Explain what that means to people who don't know what that means.
So being a frogman is synonymous with being a Navy SEAL. Okay. So a frog is an amphibious, you know, creature. It spends time in the water and on land. And essentially that's what it is to be a Navy SEAL. We operate, you know, from the water to the land. And, you know, we jump from the sky too. So we're kind of like a hybrid amphibious frog.
You guys are the Swiss Army knife of the services. You can kind of do a bunch of, a little bit of everything. Yeah,
that's right. So talking about just that potential, trying to turn it around. So I just decide, I'm going to be a frogman. And I think... Cool. If I'm going to be a Navy SEAL, my first order of business is this. I don't got to go to class anymore. So I started my truck up and took off out of that parking lot.
Here.
I was like, for whatever reason, I thought like, oh, the relief to not take finals and go pursue SEAL training, right?
You made a decision, though. And so, I think, honestly, man, I think for a lot of people that are listening to this right now and they're trying to figure out what they want to do in life, sometimes God will give it to you just like that. And you're like, that's what I'm supposed to do. I finally come to realize what I'm supposed to do now. I'm out. For other people, it might take a little bit longer, but my experience was like that. For me, it was soccer ended because I broke my leg, couldn't play soccer anymore. I was like, what do I do? I don't know what to do anymore. Similar to it was with you, skateboarding, lost all my friend groups, whatever. I went to a community college for literally like 2 months, was failing all my classes, didn't tell my parents. Dude, I failed a bowling class because didn't go to the class.
No.
But then I sat there and long story short, you know, we can talk about this another time, but was just like, I need to get my life together. And it was kind of within the snap of a finger that I started going to church and I felt God impress on me. You need to, you know, you could be a pastor. This is something I want you to do, communicate. So I love that it was just like, you know, you weren't sitting there with all the papers in front of you like they show in the movies, right? Someone's trying to decide whether they go into the services. They're like, you know, what branch should I go in? Okay, but this one, you're like, nah, I'm gonna be a Navy SEAL.
Yeah, there's so many parallels.
That's a big decision, dude.
So you failed a bowling class. So my first semester, I had a class where all you got to do is watch a movie. Oh, just watch the movie and give a little recap at the end. First semester, I got a D. So second semester, I decide I'm going to retake this, right? I was on the trajectory of having an F in that class.
Oh,
so that needed a turnaround big time. But like we're talking before we're recording, like when you know, right?
Yeah.
Like when you have that sight, that target in your sights, like you getting married, like you just know.
Yeah.
And that's what I needed.
I needed
that. And so many people are just kind of drifting about hoping that they're going to just fall into whatever it is that they're meant to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like hopping on an airplane, not knowing what the destination is going to be and hoping it gets you to the right place.
Yeah.
So people, I think, do need to kind of put in a little bit of thought. Sometimes it's a lot of thought to get there, but sometimes it is a little bit, whatever it is, it gets you your target. It's the fundamental of shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So in shooting, they teach us this principle. It's aim small, miss small.
Yeah.
And the idea behind that is, you know, if I'm just aiming at an enemy insurgent, trying to hit him somewhere, he's my target, and I miss, what happens? Well, then I'm off target, I miss. But if I aim small, I say, I'm not just trying to hit him somewhere, I'm gonna aim at the button of his t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm aiming very small in particular. Well, maybe I don't hit that button, I miss, but guess what? I'm not gonna miss by much. It's gonna be a small miss. I'm still gonna find myself on target in some mm-hmm. way. And so the more focus you could bring to whatever target it is that you're going after, the better shot you have of actually hitting it. And so it's an incredible feeling.
And that's for anything, right? I mean, that's for hunting, it's for target practice, it's for yeah. shooting competitions.
Yeah, if you're trying to hit a deer, don't just aim at the deer, like look for a hare.
Yeah.
Try and split a hare, you know, on that deer. Mm-hmm. And so once you have that target though, there it is, my thing to pull the trigger on. Now I can really just let loose all of my resources and energy on this. And that's exactly what I did. Mm-hmm. I was all in, right? So I can't even pass these community college classes because I have no passion. But now I've got this thing over here where I've got this desire to the point where I've determined, like, I will die before I quit.
Wow.
And that's what it takes. That's part of the SEAL Creed. It says the common man with uncommon desire to succeed. And the guys that make it through training, the guys that don't, you'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. You know, the ones that make it through training really break the mold. You think that's just an ordinary guy right there. And he really is an ordinary guy from all outward appearances, mm-hmm. very much like David, you know, and then you've got like the people's choice, like a Saul, the guy that's just, look at him, right? Just born and bred to be a Navy SEAL, cut from another piece of cloth, and somehow, you know, this guy's amongst the first people to quit.
Yeah.
So it's like, what's the difference maker here? Well, you know, God says in 1 Samuel that he doesn't see the way that man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And so that's what it is. It's all about heart, passion, desire, mindset, common man with uncommon desire to succeed. Or as God uses them, he says, you know, the eyes of the Lord go to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose hearts are loyal to him. Mm. Or, you know, even think about David. Before he was King David, remember, he was the runt of the litter.
Oh,
I mean, he wasn't even consideration to get picked.
No, not
right?
at all.
They're like, okay, oh, you have one more son? Let's check him out. What was the difference maker with David? Well, later on we learn he had a heart after God's own heart.
Yeah.
So these are the types of people, the little Davids, that God uses to take on a giant like Goliath. And so that's true, not only biblically speaking, but it's just a principle that applies out there in the world. In fact, most times when we hear some type of truth that maybe some corporate executive talks about, you know, like, it's good to be a servant leader and esteem the needs of others is greater than their own. Like, huh, that sounds familiar. Oh, yeah, that's rooted in the Bible right?
It's true.
And so it's a biblical truth. So I've got that heart. I've got that desire. But it's got to be proven. It's got to be shown. So I let my dad know some bad news and good news as I pointed it out, because he didn't know what was going on at school. So I let him know, like, Dad, I let you down. I wasn't really attending school. I'm not really passing any of these classes. And he's like, okay, let's get around to this good news. And it's like, well, the good news is I'm going to be a Navy SEAL. And so he's kind of looking at me and knowing how I operate. You know, he knows the right words to say to kind of feel this out. Let's see just how real this is.
So it's like, the same way.
Just to be clear, Chad, you know, joining the military is not like any of these other things you've ever done in the past, like playing ball or skateboarding or going to a local community college that when you decide you're over it, you could just stop.
You can just.
Yeah. He says, if you join the military.
This is a big deal. This is kind of a big deal.
Yeah. You're in. Like maybe you find out, oh, this isn't for me. Or suppose you quit and don't make it through. He says, just to be clear, you will be in the military.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to get a job that you don't want, like chipping paint off some boat in Japan.
Mm.
Well, there was my motivational speech right there. It's like, thank you, Dad. Right? Because I'm like, that is not going to be me, and I can't wait for my opportunity to prove to him like
cool.
that this is what I'm going to do. So days go by. I'm doing all the preparation I can, running, swimming, and he brings me inside one day, calls me in.
Were you
says,
already a pretty athletic guy at the time?
Skateboarding actually had me in pretty good shape.
Oh, I bet, dude.
Yeah,
I
so I didn't really do anything in terms of like physical conditioning prior to that. But like the first run I ever went on with a Navy SEAL, like I hung in there pretty
That's
good.
Cool.
I didn't even own a pair of running shoes. I did it in Vans. My feet were destroyed at the end, like utterly like.
Were they like Chukka Vans or were they like slip-on Vans?
I think
Vans?
They're like Caballero 5s at the time.
Awesome.
Like I was totally stoked on this pair of Vans that I had. And so I remember kicking them off at the end, and this SEAL's like looking at my feet like, do you own a pair of running shoes, you know? Like,
dude, that's an awesome illustration. I don't know, something about that, I assume, whether people are deciding to run in their boots or in their running shoes, and you've got your skate shoes on. That's pretty rad,
man. So
you're passing people in your skate shoes, and guys are just like, really?
Oh,
that
man.
Dude's passing me?
All right, guys, let's take a quick break to hear from a sponsor.
Are you
Struggling to find fresh ideas for date nights with your significant other? Well, we are excited to tell you about the answer to all your date night problems. It's called Night In Boxes. Night In Boxes is all about creating memorable date nights from the comfort of your home. The Night In Boxes team wants to give couples and families an amazing experience to create lasting memories. They even have a way to add faith to your date night to help deepen your relationship with God. This month, they're partnering with this podcast to give away two free boxes if you set up a Date Night In box or a Kids Night In box for the 6 or 12 month subscriptions. Trust me, it is going to be worth it. Each date night in a box includes interactive activities with ambiance and a tasty treat to bring you together in meaningful ways. Go to datenightinbox.com and use code CONVERGE at checkout to access the $79 discount when you sign up for a 6 or 12 month subscription and gain a fresh way to date your significant other. That's datenightinbox.com. Visit today. Have you ever felt like everyone was depending on you? Family, friends, coworkers, and everyone in between? That was the exhaustion that Lisa was living in while trying to be the perfect wife, mother, and businesswoman. When Lisa Leonard said her marriage vows, she was determined to be the best wife she could be. When her first son was born with a severe disability, she promised herself she would always be the mother he needed. When she began her jewelry business, Lisa committed to giving it her all. But she knew it wasn't working. She wanted to change things, but how? So she kept going, kept pushing, kept trying to prove she could do it all. Until one evening, in tears and desperation, Lisa realized that she could no longer be everything to everyone. Somewhere along the way, she'd lost herself. In her new book, Brave Love, released this month from our friends at Zondervan, Lisa shares her story of finding truth and wholeness in the midst of life's competing demands. Brave Love is about what it means to be human, how it feels to be broken and afraid, and what happens when we dare to love deeply. Join Lisa on a journey where you will discover you are worthy and lovable just as you are. Available everywhere you buy books. Now, back to the show.
The first time I met up with this SEAL that I'm alluding to, I had no idea that I was really meeting up with a SEAL. I was told I'm meeting up with a SEAL. But here's the thing. You know, I know my dad. I know who he knows. I know his friends. And he says, hey, so you really want to do this? You want to be a SEAL? I'm like, yeah, Dad, I want to be a SEAL. He goes, great. I set up a workout for you with a Navy SEAL.
Was your dad in the military?
No, he wasn't. And so I'm thinking, like, he doesn't know any Navy SEALs. Yeah. And he's like telling me, check out the computer screen. He's just adamant, this guy's a SEAL. I'm like, okay, if you set it up, I'll go meet up with the guy. Well, little did I know that the guy really is a SEAL, but there was a phone conversation that took place prior to the email, and it went something like this. He says, hey, look, my son wants to be a Navy SEAL, but he has no idea what he's really getting himself involved in. So I want like a test fire. You know, I'm asking, would you be willing to meet up with him? But what I want you to do, I want you to crush him.
Yeah.
Just bury him. Beat this desire of becoming a SEAL out of him if you can.
So well, the guy thought about it. Beat it out of you, or it would encourage you, this is what I'm supposed to do.
And it's
it,
a great
it,
test.
It's one or the other. Yeah.
That's right. And I'm more than happy to do that, you know, for people that are thinking about going in. Like, I'll give you a test run and we'll figure out real quick. Like, if you're not meant for this, like, we'll save you the trouble of signing up and chipping paint off some boat in Japan.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that that's going to happen, though. And so he spots me right away. You, Chad? Like, yes, sir. All right, Bubba. I was Bubba from that point forward with this guy. Get on over here. And he has a guy there that was a Marine reenlisting into the Navy, and this guy wants to be a SEAL. So I don't think I've ever been around like any military men prior to this, like up close, like that are in that sort of like workout stage of life. I've been around like World War II guys. My grandpa was in, you know, before, but you know, I've never really been exposed to like this military culture. So now I've got this Navy SEAL and a Marine, and I'm just kind of like awkwardly standing by my skateboard shoes. Like, what do you want me to do? He's calling out exercises that I don't even know, like flutter kicks, you know, or like up this and overs.
This is like a cool scene in a movie, dude. Oh, it really is. It really is.
Yeah, if you really want a picture, it's a beach parking lot. We're outside the bathrooms at the parking lot. And he brings this portable pull-up bar that he can hang from anywhere, right? Like any tree, any bar that hangs. So we're doing pull-ups like outside the bathroom. Remember like people looking at us all weird and some like little kid goes like, what are you guys doing? Are you guys doing yoga? And like the SEAL's like, no, it's Pilates, you know, like as he's like hanging in that pull-up position.
That's awesome.
And he winds up sending me and this Marine for a run out into the wetlands. And so he says, you know, he tells the Marine, take the lead for the first 15 minutes, 15 minutes into it. Bubba, you go ahead, take over. I've obviously got some gear to clean up back here at the truck. So I'm going to do that. And I'm going to catch up with you guys on the run. Just go down that trail, away from the ocean, out into the wetlands. So I don't know what the final destination is. Just go along Let's with go. This Marine, yeah. right? Well, there I am in my Caballero 5s, 15 minutes into the run, looking at my little G-Shock watch, like, time to take the lead, and this guy's going slow. Yeah. So I take off on him, just leave him in the dust. And the sense of arrogant pride that I began to, like, be overcome with at that moment, that I am just leaving this Marine behind in the dust.
In your skate shoes.
Yeah. I'm just this teenage punk kid, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm looking back, I don't even see him anymore. And then the thought, like, ha, where's that Navy SEAL? I thought he's supposed to catch up. So I'm thinking of the names of my pals at home I'm going to be bragging to, how this Marine and this Navy SEAL could never catch me on the run. And then it's like I take another look, and it is like a scene out of Terminator 2 where the bad guy, that T-1000, wearing, the police uniform and knife hands chasing down the vehicle. The Navy SEAL is coming down the trail with knife hands for me, right?
Man.
He is booking it, and he is a phenomenal athlete. Yep. Little do I know. Well, I mean, of course, he's a Navy SEAL. Mm-hmm. He's the first Navy SEAL I've ever met.
Yeah.
But out of all the Navy SEALs I've ever met after him, he is the preeminent number one Navy SEAL. He's the SEAL of SEALs, right?
Makes sense your dad would set you up with that guy.
Yeah, it worked out that way.
Yeah.
And so he runs me down. He passes me, and I never saw what was coming next because I'm thinking we're just in this race, this challenge. Mm-hmm. He passes me, and he just stops and turns on a dime, and I'm greeted by his fist as I'm going into him full speed, just going right into my stomach. Hmm. He impales me. I mean, feet coming off the ground, clothesline.
Just going for it.
I remember that feeling of seeing sky, not being on the ground yet, feeling the wind knocked out of me, and then the back hitting the ground, poofed her up all around me.
Jeez.
And I mean, there's nobody around. I've ran so far ahead of that Marine now. I'm thinking like, I need that guy to help me right now. Like, save me. Because my thought is, remember at the time, all I know is this, some guy my dad met off the internet. Now he's got me in the middle of the wetlands with nobody around, like physically assaulting me. I'm thinking, set up, like Craigslist killer, dude. And he was physically attacking me. He jumps on top of me. He's ragdolling me in the ground. He's got me by my shirt. And I remember that sound still. It's like impressed in my brain of just the threads ripping, spit flying out of his mouth as it's hitting me in the forehead, the cheek. And he's just going ballistic. And I don't understand what he's screaming about.
I have a weird feeling I know what he's gonna tell you, but keep going.
Well, his question then that came through, this is what I heard out of all of everything. He goes, you want to be a Navy SEAL? You better stay 3 paces behind me. And there was something about those words right there with the wind being knocked out of me, all this chaos going on around me. It's like it clicked. Like, this is it. And this is for real. And this was like a moment that literally changed the rest of my life.
That's cool.
I knew, like, the way I respond in this moment is going to affect the trajectory of the rest of my life. If I quit now,
fight or flight, dude.
I'll forever
fight
be a quitter,
yeah.
Right? If I get up and go, as much as I felt like I didn't want to get up and go at this point, right? But I knew I would regret it for the rest of my life. So if I quit now, I'll forever be a quitter. If I go after him, like, this is my chance.
Yeah.
This is my chance. And so he gets off of me and he says it one more time, 3 paces, and he turns and he takes off. So I'm going after him. Just had the wind knocked out of me after running as fast as I could. I am not exaggerating. The thought in my head as I was running ahead of him was I didn't have time to spit at the wrong moment. I don't know if people know that feeling. You're running so fast at such a fast pace. If you spit at the wrong moment, it throws your whole breathing off.
Yeah.
That's the pace. And now I'm still trying to get my air back. I'm doing the weird growling and growling, and he's taking off.
Yeah.
So I'm going after him. And I end up staying on his heels. And he's trying to get rid of me. And I just stay on his heels. This goes on for a few miles down this trail. And I don't know that by, you know, actually doing it in the moment. I just went into this weird tunnel vision going after this guy. It was the aftermath.
You're in the zone.
How he talked about, like,
yeah,
how far we just went, the pace that we were just going. Like, we were running sub 6-minute miles. I wasn't a runner. I'm in skateboard shoes, you know. But I hung in there. And we finally get to a point where he stops. He's pacing back and forth. He's staring at me. To me, it looks like he wants to fight me.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, what did I do? Mm-hmm. What did I do to set this guy off? And I'm thinking, I don't want to fight this guy, you know? Again, I'm like this teenage punk kid. Like, so I'm looking down at the ground. I'm like, don't look at him. I'm thinking in my head, just use your peripherals. Don't look him in the eyes. Don't set this guy off. And he breaks this really awkward tension by asking me, just says, hey, if we would have gone another mile or two, would you have stayed with me? And I just told him flat out, like, Scott, I'll die. I'll die before I quit.
Mm.
like right there, huge change of demeanor in him. I mean, he went from looking like he wanted to fight me to all of a sudden he's smiling. He's excited. He's kind of shrugging his shoulders. He's saying, hey, awesome. Well, do you want to meet up again for another workout tomorrow? And I'm still trying to process.
You earned his respect. That's what it was. You earned his respect.
I'm trying to process what's going on right now. Like this guy, I'm thinking, was that a flashback?
Yeah.
Like what did he just go through right there to attack me like that? Does he remember like what he just did?
He's
schizophrenic.
He's trying to get you to say no.
And so I don't understand. It took me a while. I thought every workout is going to be like this. And I just agreed to this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going back home thinking about that. But then I think if that's what it takes, that's what I'll do.
That's cool.
And so I get home. My dad's like, how did it go? And I think he was probably expecting a little something different. I step through that door. I go, Dad, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be a SEAL. And so he's like, all right.
He's all okay. You know, so, he called that guy too and go, okay, what really happened?
It's exactly what, in fact, Scott, what I find out later, I found this out months later. All right. They both kind of fessed up to me over lunch one day when we were all three sitting down together that this was all a big setup. This wasn't just some workout. And so Scott had called my dad and says, look, I know what you want me to do. And I'm telling you, I gave it a go. But I think your son might actually have what it takes to make it. To start meeting up with them. I'd like to start working with them. So from that day forward, I began to meet up with this Navy SEAL, Scott Helvenston, virtually every day. Mm. And thankfully, it was no longer this beat-down session. It became more of a building up.
That's awesome.
I moved on in life from just being Bubba to eventually I became Junior. He really took me under his wing as he's mentoring me. And I idolize this guy. He's everything that I want to be. And I kind of said earlier, like, Scott's this extraordinary Navy SEAL. Mm-hmm. And I don't just say that as a matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact because he was a world champion pentathlete. He was the fastest Navy SEAL on the SEAL training obstacle course. He's the only man to ever beat the beast on a television program called Man vs. Beast, where he raced a chimpanzee through an obstacle course. And he pulled ahead of the monkey on the monkey bars, all right? And he's also the youngest man to ever make it through training. So, I mean, all these records that he holds. He was a SEAL by the time he was 17 years old.
Wow.
And that was only possible because of the adversity he went through as a child. He grew up in a lot of different foster homes. Mm-hmm. So the military took him at this early age. And so to this day, he's the only 17-year-old, you know, Navy SEAL that ever was, hopefully that ever is, because I don't want anyone to ever have to go through those types of life circumstances that would lead up to the possibility of beating that record.
Mm-hmm.
But I get to train with this guy every day, and he's just really just pouring into me, investing into me. He really is. Like, he's a servant leader in my life. Like, Jesus says, like, that I didn't come to be served, but to serve.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, that's like the command of the universe saying that.
Yeah.
It's like, this is how Scott was in my life.
That's cool.
And so he got me ready, and so I signed up. And I have this date that's set. I'm going to be shipping off for boot camp, finally getting this thing going. And he takes this opportunity, as he put it, to go overseas again. And so the turnaround was quick for him. He was actually leaving before I leave. And he's telling me, all right, Junior, on the phone, I'm going to go do this thing. He's referring to going off to Iraq. And he says, but I just want you to know something that I've never told anybody I've ever trained before. And so, you know, knowing my mentor's about to just like send it like that, I was like, yeah, like, let's hear it. Like, I'm pressing record in my brain. He says, I know you're going to make it through SEAL training.
That's cool.
And so to come from someone like Scott that I just admired so much, it's like that meant the world to me
I bet.
And it gave me just that much more confidence and excitement. I was like, expect it. Like, looking forward to, like, I can't wait for my opportunity to, like, prove him right.
Yeah.
To make him proud, but to also just to do this thing, right? To, like, be a part of that brotherhood. And so he's reminding me of the timeline, how, you know, he's going to be gone for a couple months and I'm about to go do Navy boot camp. That's about a couple months long. So by the time I start SEAL training, he says he's going to be back from Iraq. And he says, we're going to see you make it through. So we say our goodbyes, get off the phone. See you later, Scott. Can't wait to see you when you get back. So he's gone. And I'm just days away from going. And I figure if I can't work out with my mentor in person, the best thing I could do next to that is do some of the workouts we used to do together. I remember them all, like the programming. And I remember one day getting up and the television is on in the background. And I look over at the screen and I can't believe what I see on the screen. It's very confusing because it's a picture of Scott on television smiling. And my first thought was, okay, what's Scott doing on TV right now? Because he's been on TV for a lot of these different TV programs. He's this phenomenal athlete. That Man vs. Beast wasn't the only program he was ever on. So I'm just thinking, I thought he's supposed to be in Iraq. Like, what's he doing on TV? And they're using this very typical profile image like they use before they introduce somebody onto a program. So I'm just trying to figure this out. I'm looking at it. And then I see in the lower third of the screen, though, and it shows Scott's birth date and then followed by a dash. And it says March 31st, 2004. And before I could even process in my mind, like, man, the meaning of that right there, I didn't even have that opportunity, because it switches from a smiling picture of him to suddenly, boom, like graphic video footage. Jeez. And I'm looking at a video of Scott lifeless in the streets in Fallujah, Iraq. There's a vehicle burning in the background, and it just keeps cutting to these different little scenes. And what had happened was these insurgents, very similar to what groups like ISIS do today, where it's not enough for them to commit some atrocity, like behead people or set a Jordanian pilot on fire. Mm-hmm. They like to videotape the things that they do because they want to spread it around as a sort of a scare tactic. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking at this video footage that was taken by these insurgents as they had ambushed the vehicle that Scott was in with these three other Americans. And it's all these different scenes of this angry Iraqi mob. They've got sticks and rods, and they're doing everything they can to try and mutilate their bodies, hitting them. Jeez. And they find rope, and they go dragging them through the dirt streets of Fallujah like it's a celebration. And they get tired, and they hook them up to vehicles.
Yeah.
And then they drag them through the streets of Fallujah behind these vehicles. They get to a bridge called the Euphrates River Bridge, and they string them upside down. And then they set their bodies on fire. And then they look into a camera and they begin to chant over and over in this camera, just like with celebration. They're chanting in Arabic, "Fallujah is the graveyard of Americans. Fallujah is the graveyard of Americans." Jeez. I think, pretty needless to say, I'll never have the words to describe like just what all those surrounding moments were like.
I mean, probably a father figure. You know, obviously, you have your father, but father figure, was like mentor, a second leader.
Father.
Yeah.
He was like a second father to me.
He encouraged you and he supported you and he gave you the foundations, the resources, the mental capacity, the strength to help you, what we know of now,
right,
pass the training to become a Navy SEAL.
And, you know, at that moment, though, the world really came out from underneath me, because he did prepare me, but I was never supposed to do all of this by myself.
Yeah, he's supposed
like
to be
there. Like he said,
you.
I'm going to get back. We're going to see you make it through. And so my world for a moment there was just so out of orbit. I was just like so disoriented. Like,
were you ever mad at God for this? Were you frustrated? Was there
doubts? Yes,
was
absolutely.
There, God, why would you do this? Was there?
There was absolutely that.
Was there ever a moment where you thought, well, then God, is this what I'm really supposed to be doing?
There was. I questioned everything.
Interesting.
It's almost like finding out you're in the Matrix. Like, it's just so weird. It's like my whole world has completely changed. Like, I'm in the fourth dimension now. Like, what is going on in my life? You begin to question everything. My family's begging me now not to go in because they just saw what happened. They know Scott. And so this is very personal. So my mom is like, we don't want the same thing to happen to you.
Yeah.
And being a parent now myself, it's like, I would never want my child to go in right after seeing something like that. Like, that would be, so they're doing everything they can to try and stop me. But, you know, one of the things we do when we lose somebody is we go back in our mind and we think about the last time we were with them. We think about the last conversation we had with them, because it becomes like that much more important. Like, what did we talk about? Like, what was said?
Mm-hmm.
And part of our SEAL creed, it actually talks a little bit about adversity. It says that we are forged by adversity.
Mm-hmm.
And so adversity is something that is going to come your way in life. If anyone's listening right now, you've faced it already to some degree. But here's the thing.
And you will again.
It's imminent. There's going to be more.
Yep.
And you have no control over that. And so if you have no control over outside circumstances sometimes that come creeping in, what's the one thing that you do have control over? The one thing you do have a grip on is the way that you decide how to respond to it. You decide whether or not it's going to be what we could call a wing or a weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, will that adversity be a weight that just sinks you, leaves you knocked down, never to get back up again? People just say, look, they're out for the count. They're never getting back up from that. Or do you find a wing in there somehow? And that wing would be just a way to rise to the occasion.
That's good. I like that analogy.
And so for me, I guess you could say I found that wing in that last conversation with Scott. As I was thinking about, what did we talk about? Like, that's when I remember he says, Junior, I know you're going to make it through SEAL training. It's like those words were echoing in my head. It's like,
What a cool last conversation to have.
Yeah.
Even though that is hard, and I'm sure you would have loved to talk to him again or have him see you complete training, but what a cool last conversation to remember of him saying, man, I know you're going to pass.
It is, man. And I know the exact spot I was in, the old room, you know, at the house, and I still have the old cell phone that, you know, we had that call on. I have his old contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just, it was so tough to get over. It's like part of me was, you know, going through all the different emotions. I went through that denial where, you know, maybe Scott had to do a secret operation. maybe I had to do a secret operation and fake a death, you know? And so, I mean, I'd even call his phone knowing he's dead.
Interesting.
You know, I'd call his phone and it would go to the voicemail. And I was like, wondered, you know, if you'd pick up maybe somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it was definitely a very tough time. I couldn't talk about it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the first times I really talked about it was in SEAL training when instructors were questioning everyone in Hell Week, why are you here? You know, Scott Helvenston was one of the big reasons, like, why I'm here. I had his name written on the inside of my hat as a constant reminder and a motivation to make it through. And, you know, at the time, I didn't have a really close relationship with God. Mm-hmm. I was a believer. I was brought up in a Christian household. I would call myself a Christian. I'd raise my hand, who here's a Christian? Like, that would be me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, the way that I was living my life was there's no evidence of that. I lived like God did not exist.
Yeah.
And so I knew what was right, but I just wasn't doing it, mm-hmm. you know? And so I would just think, yeah, I'm a Christian too. Yeah, me and Jesus, we're cool. We'd fist bump, you know?
Yeah, I was the same way in high school.
Yeah. And so I'd have Christians like, no, you're not. You're not right with God, you know? It's just
no,
like,
bro, you're not
You're just one of the serious ones, you know? Get a life, you know? I'll be like you when I'm 50 years old one day, you know? I'll slow down. So I just always thought that I knew what I didn't know. I didn't have a right relationship with God.
So as this happens with Scott, we obviously know that you do pass your Navy SEAL training. Going back to the story you started off with in the beginning, where you're sitting there behind your 50 cal, what would you say it was?
Machine gun.
Your 50 cal machine gun.
Let's just say that's a weapon that could really reach out and touch somebody.
Yeah. In our last few minutes together, now going back to that story, knowing that we know now that you've passed, you know, it's something that you accomplished. Okay, now we're going back to the beginning of what we talked about, which is this what your book is on too as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Scratching the surface here.
Yeah, and I just want people to know that. So you can check out Seal of God and hear, you know, read the whole story, and I want you to, and I'll encourage people to, and we'll make sure to put it up in the detail section of the podcast. But now going back to the beginning of the story, you're sitting behind that 50 cal machine gun, and this is supposed to be your last, it's your last hurrah. Like,
we're rolling out, and I see a sign that says Fallujah, Iraq. And it says it in Arabic, and it's one of the last big signs you see before you turn into Fallujah, where my mentor's ambush.
Jeez.
We passed this sign, I don't know how many times while we were out there, and it never hit me that way. That I wonder if I'm looking at the same sign Scott looked at before he got ambushed.
Yeah.
And little did we know that I'm looking at a sign before we get ambushed.
That's crazy,
so
man.
We pull up to this house, and the bottom line was this guy knew that we were coming, and he had his buddy set up in three different firing positions that had barricaded firing positions, and we start taking, by surprise, effective fire, meaning the rounds are being very effective. Mm. And in ambush, the odds are against you. Remember, this is how my mentor, and all the guys he was with, like, they got wiped out in that vehicle. And so the odds are really against you. And I remember the first words that come over the radio from the assault leader is, all right, boys, we're going to get out of here, but I need you to push left. So push left, tactically speaking, meant that we're not just going to run away with our tails tucked between our legs. We're actually going to take like a really heavy offensive before we try and escape. And so we're maneuvering on these guys, trying to flank them. Well, really against all the odds, we wind up killing the enemy, driving them back, getting into the house that we were trying to get into, capturing the guy that was trying to kill us, wounded, but alive.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up saving his life. And for me, that was a big full circle moment.
That's cool.
That was some closure right there because, you know, here I am almost 6 years later after what had happened to Scott.
So you're telling me you saved the life of the guy who was trying to kill you guys.
That's right.
That's
we bring him in our own hospital.
I love that, dude.
And, you know,
that made me feel weird inside, like in a good way. Like,
yeah.
That's really cool.
And it's something that still goes on to this day. In fact, there's a Navy SEAL right now locked up in the brig wrongfully for a supposed war crime, when in reality, he's trying to save an ISIS combatant's life.
Wow.
And the guy died. You know, but unfortunately, just like every system out there is corrupted politically, you know, there's corruption. There's corruption everywhere you look. You know, this guy's being wrongfully accused of murdering this guy when he was trying to save his life. And so that's definitely something that, you know, if people haven't heard about it yet, Eddie Gallagher, definitely go check him out. And there's a lot of different ways that people could help. You know, one of the big ways is just the exposure, because it's not the same due process of law that it would be. You're not assumed innocent until proven guilty, you know, in the military. But I didn't mean to segue that way, but that was an important thing to bring up. But
I came out of that. Saved this guy.
We saved this guy. I was one of the guys that personally carried him in our own hospital.
Yeah.
That was a full circle moment for me. You know, that was some closure. Because for all I know, this guy had a hand in or definitely approved of what happened to my mentor.
Yeah.
Here we are operating in the same province. And now, you know, we're saving, you know, one of these guys' lives that was just trying to kill us.
That's crazy.
But I came home alive, but it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah.
And if I could wrap it up, as, you know, this way, it would be, that our freedom isn't free. It's paid for in the currency of bloodshed on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. It's worth highlighting a couple of men that have, you know, paid that price. Mm-hmm. One being a Navy SEAL, Michael Mansoor, who was a SEAL on top of a roof, providing cover for other SEALs that were out on a road. When from an unknown location, a hand grenade got thrown onto the roof. It hit Mikey in the chest, falls to the dark. If you can imagine, he had an exit just a step away. He could have saved himself, but the other guys didn't have time to get up and make it past the grenade. So he made a decision. He lays on it, and he absorbed the blast of that grenade all in himself, wow. All that shrapnel and metal. And this just kind of shows what a tough character he was. He suffered for 30 minutes before he finally died.
Yeah.
But because of what he did, every single one of these other guys on the roof, they all lived. And so I always tell folks, mark these words down in history. Greater love has no one than this, yep. The one that lays down his life for his friends. Yep. You know, my friend Scott, now that I am, you know, able to talk about it to some degree, I do see that there is some type of silver lining there. Number one, I have a responsibility. You know, he could die two deaths. He could die the death that he died, and he could die a whole nother death, and that's just leaving him behind, forgetting him and never retelling his story. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let him die in that sense. He lives on in the sense that I had that responsibility to memorialize, to share his story, but he's also an example of these words. Because one of the things he said to me is, Junior, when I go over there, perhaps I can make a difference. He was over there for the sake of freedom. So although he was killed and all these awful things and hung from that bridge, it wasn't in vain. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the one who spoke those words of greater love, you know, this is a quote that comes from none other than Jesus of Nazareth.
Yep.
And he said those words at a very unique time prior to going to the cross.
Yep.
And not many people think about the cross in this way. And I'm glad that we could bring some clarity this way. You know, that just as a man like Mike Mansoor, Scott Helvenston have sacrificed their lives, Mikey jumped on a hand grenade, absorbing the blast of that grenade on himself so others could live. Think of the cross this way, folks, that Jesus, when he went to the cross, he absorbed the blast. Not of a hand grenade, he absorbed the wrath of our sin upon himself. And remember, that grenade was never Mikey's problem. It was always the others that were caught in the problem. And sin was never Jesus' problem. It was always us caught in the crosshairs of sin. But he shielded that for us,
he took the blast,
so that we could have a way to live with him.
He took the burden upon himself love of others. Yeah.
And Scott, you know, although he was killed and hung from that bridge for the sake of freedom, let's never forget that Jesus, he was killed and he was hung from the cross of Calvary so that we could be set free
from
the eternal consequences of our own sin. And so that's greater love,
dude,
has no one than this one that lays down his life for his friends. You can see it in men like Mike Mansoor, Scott Helvenston, so many others that have gone before us. But most importantly, look to the cross, because that's the proper perspective of that King of Kings, that Lord of Lords, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world.
That's awesome, bro. Dude, I'm sure you have, literally, I'm sure we could have another episode. We could talk about some other stories, but man, it's such a crazy journey that you've been through. And it's so cool to see you stepped out of active duty, correct?
That's right.
And now you're traveling around the world, you're speaking, you're telling your story, you're sharing the gospel. Like, it's God has obviously said, okay, now I have this plan for you. And it's like so cool to see you step into that. Bro, I thank you for your service. I really do.
Oh, thank you.
Man, let me ask you one more question before we end. Was there ever a time, I'm very outspoken about mental health. I always have been. I feel like the more outspoken I am about it, the better hold of it I have on my own life. Was there ever a time when you got back where you kind of struggled with some PTSD or some?
I guess you could say my sort of red pill come to Jesus moment while I was in the SEAL teams.
Yeah.
And I think that protected me, I think, against a lot of those types of issues, because I've seen the guys around me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can see the same things and go through some of the same things. And the experience that you have, like coming back, like the effect that it has on people, it's different. It's like the same sun that can melt wax hardens clay.
Yep.
You know, it's like the same experience, like for some people. It's just it could affect them, you know, differently. And I really do believe that, like, God, he just preserved me in that. I can't take any type of, like, personal credit, say that it was mental toughness.
No,
right,
that's
there.
That's awesome to hear.
I know this much. Like, anyone that's going through, you know, because I've had stages in my life, right, where I felt like just going through the dark lands. Like, I feel depressed. I feel like I don't want to go on, right? I know that.
And I've been there too, and I'm very outspoken about it.
We'll never have peace at all unless we have peace with our Creator.
Yep.
So that is at a minimum, you know, the starting point right there. But you look at incredible men of the Bible, like Elijah. He gets used by God in such an incredible way. Calls down fire from heaven, like takes out the prophets of Baal.
Uh-huh.
And then moments later, he's literally suicidal.
Yep.
You know, he doesn't want to live
Job
anymore, right? And so it's the ups
David,
and downs.
I mean, yeah, you got to. Yeah,
but
definitely.
These are the men that God uses in incredible ways.
The scary thing
is that person that has never gone through any type of adversity, they don't have any blotches in their life. Mm. Where do you see that person in the Bible ever getting used?
Yeah.
The only person that was like that really, you know, in a way was the example that God used mm-hmm. was that King Saul, the people's choice, right? Mm-hmm. And so we kind of lift up these stars in our eyes, you know, that person that's just so polished and perfect right there. It's like, well, God never used a man of that mold.
Yeah.
And so if you're defective, you're perfect. You're primed then. You're ready
God
to be used.
God specializes in using broken people. And I say because broken people are all that exist in the world.
That's it.
I love it, man. Dude, thank you. Seriously. This was so much fun, man. Thank you so much for jumping on and sharing about your book. So it's called Seal of God. Is the best way for people to pick it up just going to Amazon, typing in Seal of God?
If they want to get a signed copy, they could go to sealofchrist.com.
Perfect.
Yep.
And so they can get a signed copy from you. I'll put the details in the podcast details section. But man, just seriously, thank you so much for joining me. This was so much fun. I really do. I look forward for us to jumping on again and talking about even some more of the
SEAL training.
Yeah, some more of the SEAL training that you went through, some of the hardships maybe you went through, maybe more of the doubts you went through and kind of combating your relationship with God and trying to figure out who you are. And so, man, just thank you so much. I love you, bro. I'm excited to, man, just do life with you. For those of you guys that don't know, Chad was actually a youth pastor for a while at Harvest, where I am currently pastoring at right now with Pastor Greg Laurie. And so it's just another person that's part of the family that I get to, you know, talk to and talk about our relationships with God and our stories. And so I just appreciate you, bro. I really do.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, sir.
Until next time.
I appreciate your service. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Cross and Culture with Jared Wilson. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. For more information about this show, visit convergepodcastnetwork.com. With so many podcasts to choose from, we're glad you chose to tune in today. We'd like to invite you to listen to one of our other Converge podcast partners. Head in the Clouds with Ryan Romeo is all about having a dream or calling to serve God, but also putting daily action steps into play along the journey. Great encouragement for those looking to do big things for God. Subscribe today to Head in the Clouds with Ryan Romeo in your favorite podcasting app.